Danger to the Duke. Written by Barbara Cartland. Narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1885. As the P&O liner moved out the harbour of Alexandria, Major Michael Moore breathed a sigh of relief. India was now far behind him, and very much to his surprise, he was still alive. It was the Viceroy, the Marquis of Dufferin, who had said to him, "I am deeply grateful to you, Moore, for saving my life, and of a great number of British troops. At the same time, you are now a marked man, and the sooner you return home for a long holiday, the better." Michael Moore realized that what the Viceroy was saying was common sense. He had been intimately involved in one of the most dangerous and frightening undercover operations he had ever known. When he came to India as a subaltern, he had been attracted, as so many young officers, by what was known as the Great Game, which had started at the beginning of the century, when the Russian troops had begun their southward advance through the Caucasus. Having crushed the Caucasian tribes after a long and bitter resistance, the Russians next switched their gaze eastwards. In a vast area of desert and mountains lay the Muslim Khanates of Khiva and Bukhara, and it was only as Russian victories over these small tribes followed one after another monotonously that fears for the safety of India were beginning to be felt. One by one, the ancient caravan towns fell to the hard-rising Russian Cossacks, who were moving closer and closer to India's ill-guarded frontiers. It was then that the British military became involved in what was whispered about as the Great Game. They risked their lives over and over again. They filled in blanks on the map, reported on Russian movements, and tried to win the allegiance of suspicious Khans. Many failed to return from the treacherous northwest and died bravely in appalling circumstances. As the threat from Russia increased, so did the numbers of participants in the Great Game. Most were professionals, Indian army officers or political agents, and they were sent by their superiors in Calcutta to gather intelligence by any means they could muster. Others were amateurs, sometimes travellers of independent means, and they were surprisingly successful in what one of the Tsar's ministers once called this tournament of shadows. In his years of service in India, Michael Moore had become a professional. He was trusted by the Viceroy and the chiefs of the army to take on assignments that were thought to be too perilous for anyone else, and he had been amazingly successful. This was principally because when he first arrived in India, he did not prize his own life very highly. He had actually journeyed to India to escape from England and a broken heart. Michael Moore was the son of Lord Charles Moore, the third son of the fourth Duke of Grangemore. The Duke was an extremely affluent and important grandee who had expelled his son Charles from the bosom of his family, and Michael had in fact never met his grandfather. Lord Charles had rebelled against the ancient tradition that his father should choose for him the woman he should marry. Both his elder brothers had meekly obeyed their father's wishes, and when they were 21, the Duke had arranged their marriages. He chose blue-blooded young women, whose family, in his opinion, was the equal of his own. Lord Charles had seen his eldest brother married to an exceedingly dull and rather plain girl, the daughter of a neighbouring duke who was a friend of his father. For his second son, the Duke had chosen a Bulgarian princess, whose father was anxious to find some excuse for flying the Union Jack in his small and not well-protected country.